From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Piedmont, California.
Pleasanton. Fall Town.
Richmond. Sunset.
Oakland, California. Concord,
California. Fairfield. Foothill.
Coming up, we'll find out how Bay Area pooches are finding themselves at the center of a park use dispute that's been going on for years.
There are very few places you can go with a dog anymore, and Muir Beach is one of them.
Then a new campaign has a message for immigrant communities.
I think it's really important for people who are living in this country to have the right to fully belong.
And we do-si-do down Highway 1 to find out the story behind this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound.
We noticed when we saw an aerial photograph of it that it looked like a slice of pie. It's shaped like a triangle.
We're crossing borders and barnyards today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Just over the Golden Gate Bridge in Marin County, a few miles from Muir Woods, lies Muir Beach. The beautiful and peaceful waterfront is a favorite for locals, travelers, and also man's best friend. But letting that dog off-leash could soon be a thing of the past at Muir Beach and other open spaces in the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, or GGNRA. Late next year, the 80,000 acres of GGNRA's land from San Mateo County to Marin County will begin to operate under a new management plan for dogs. The proposed plan is an effort to regulate the rising number of dogs and visitors to the park, and it sparked a slow-burning controversy over how to use our public land. Reporter Tiffany Kamhai has more.
Marin County native Laura Pandapis has been living in the small neighborhood that surrounds Muir Beach for 7 years. She brings her dog to its off-leash friendly beachfront almost every day.
Muir Beach is a very dog-friendly community.
Even on an overcast day, like when I met Pandapis, the beach is buzzing with life. Beachgoers stake out spots on the sand, shorebirds circle overhead, and dogs run and play in the water.
There are very few places you can go with a dog anymore, and Muir Beach is one of them.
Pandapis is a supporter of off-leash dog walking and a member of Marin County Dog Owners Group, one of a handful of off-leash advocacy groups across the Bay Area. Pandapis says off-leash exercise is vital for healthy and happy dogs.
It's so important for the dog's well-being. A well-exercised dog is a well-behaved dog. It's a well-socialized dog. It's better for everybody.
For many dog owners like Pandapis, this freedom to walk their dogs leash-free is an important part of the GGNRA. And they say it's what separates it from other national parks.
It's a real conundrum because the park was not established to be a national park. It was established to be a recreation area, and they're very different things.
To really understand the purpose of the GGNRA, you have to go back to 1972, when the park was first created by an act of Congress. It was during an era known as Parks for the People, an initiative that focused on bringing nature closer to people living in urban areas, like San Francisco.
It is an area for people who get away from the cities to recreate, to hike, to walk their dogs, to enjoy the beauty of the place, and to learn about nature.
This is Huey Johnson. He's the founder and president of an environmental sustainability nonprofit, and he also was one of the original movers and shakers who helped create the GGNRA.
I think the people who were behind this idea of stamping out the use of bikes and dog walking, and fires on the beach for that matter, are really insensitive and ill-informed about the meaning and use of a recreation area.
There's actually a long tradition of off-leash dogs in many Bay Area parks that predates the creation of the GGNRA itself. So when the park was first being developed, it inherited the recreational activities that were already taking place, making it the only park in the national park system off-leash friendly. But according to GGNRA communications manager Howard Lovett,
as the numbers of dogs and the numbers of visitors increased, that it became evident that we needed to create some sort of structured rule that applied to this park. This rule is exclusive to Golden Gate. It's not meant to apply anywhere else.
That was almost 12 years ago, and in theory, this new rule will replace the aptly named pet policy of 1979, a set of guidelines that wasn't really enforced. But now environmental advocates like Brent Plater say the GGNRA needs to rein in the dogs.
Off-leash dogs are known to harass wildlife, especially shorebirds, in a disproportionate way from the rest of the activities of the GGNRA.
Plater is the executive director of Wild Equity, an environmental justice group based in San Francisco. The group is proposing what he calls a very simple solution.
To ensure that those off-leash dog play areas are physically enclosed by some sort of boundary or barrier.
Plater also says the city of San Francisco has more off-leash dog parks than any other city.
There isn't any demonstrable need for more and more areas.
At Crissy Field in San Francisco, Martha Walters disagrees. She's president of the Crissy Field Dog Owners Group.
Where are those dogs going to go? They're probably going to go to the city parks. What's going to happen? There's going to be an increase in conflict. It's going to have a terrible impact upon the environment.
Walter says the GGNRA's proposed dog management plan didn't evaluate the effect of forcing dogs to be on leash.
Because dogs are a lot more aggressive on leash than they are off leash. And what we're trying to do is to avoid conflict. And it seems like the Park Service is trying to create more conflict by being so restrictive in their preferred alternatives.
The current dog management plan is over 1,500 pages long and suggests six alternatives for the GGNRA's off-leash areas, from very restrictive use to minimal restrictions. And it takes into consideration the natural resources that live in its 80,000 acres, things like native Franciscan manzanita trees, shorebirds like the western snowy plover, and ocean creatures like the sea otter. Here's communication manager Howard Levitt.
We're here to protect resources for the future. At the same time, we want to make sure that people can enjoy those resources, learn from those resources. So it's a complicated mission.
The dog management plan has received close to 8,000 public comments, all of which were taken into consideration, says Levitt.
And we've heard from everyone you can imagine.
After everyone has their say, the question of managing dogs still lies on the National Park System's dual mission of recreation and preservation, and where the balance should be struck in this case. A final comment period for the GGNRA's dog management plan will be announced later this fall. The new rules will not go into effect until 2015. Until then, dogs are free to roam the parks without the constraint of a leash. In San Francisco, I'm Tiffany Kamhai for Cross Currents.
So, would the new rules affect you and your pets? If so, tell us how on our feedback line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Changes in the law can oftentimes be controversial, and sometimes they can just make things more complicated. Last February, the federal government announced a new form to apply for citizenship or naturalization. It's twice as long and more complex, and the price to apply has gone up from $200 back in 2000 to $680 today. So for a family of four, that means dishing out over $2,700. That's one reason so many eligible immigrants are putting off citizenship. The New Americans campaign is trying to change that. It's a new partnership between organizations nationwide to encourage green card holders to apply for citizenship sooner rather than later. I sat down with the New American campaign project director, Melissa Rogers, and asked her why people don't seem as keen on citizenship.
There are many reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons is that there are not very good incentives in place from the U.S. government to encourage people to apply for citizenship rather than retain their green cards. Because, for example, it costs $680 to apply for citizenship, whereas the cost of renewing your green card is lower. It also is a complex legal process to apply for citizenship. And some people may feel intimidated and may not be able to afford an attorney to help them through the process. There's also an English language requirement that can be waived for people of a certain age or who've been here for a while, but not everybody knows about that. And so there may be people who could apply for citizenship in their own language but aren't doing it.
So let's take the incentive portion of what you said. What does a person get by becoming a citizen, and how do you explain that to people?
There are so many benefits to citizenship. One of them, a very obvious one, is that you get to vote. There are other benefits as well. Being a citizen is the best defense against the risk of deportation. So people who are here with a green card may feel really safe and secure in being here, but anybody with a green card is still susceptible to the risk of being deported. And we saw that happen in the 90s when there was a change in the immigration laws, and there were people who had been here for a long time. The law changed and people became deportable. If you have a green card, you can't leave the U.S. for more than 6 months at a time. And if you leave for longer, you could be considered to have abandoned your green card status. And then at that point, you might not be able to come back.
When you're talking to would-be immigrants, do those reasons resonate with them more than because you get to become an American, because you get to become part of this country, kind of those deeper belonging, even philosophical, meanings behind citizenship?
It's such an interesting question, because I think for people who have taken the step to become a citizen, that belonging and that meaning is very important. I've seen it in my family.
Can you tell us about that?
Sure. My grandmother was a refugee. And
from where?
She was a refugee. She came over. At the point at which she came over, she'd been stateless for several decades, and she came over from France during the Second World War. And the United States was the country that gave her citizenship. And for her, she describes traveling back to the United States and being welcomed and being told, "Welcome home." And for her, that was incredibly deep and meaningful, and her allegiance to the U.S. as a citizen is very powerful. And I think we see that in immigrant communities for people who have taken the step. When we're talking about targeting people who have not taken the step, it's very challenging to find what the right issues are that are going to motivate people. Because the folks who take the step of becoming citizens right when they first become eligible, they're clearly motivated. But for the people who've been here for longer, who maybe have been here 20 years or 30 years, they may already feel like they belong. And so we have to find the right messages. And maybe it's the right people within their networks or their communities or their churches to convince them of the importance of it. And then I think once you're on the other side and you are a citizen, you can speak with power about why it matters.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Ababa. I'm speaking with Melissa Rogers, Project Director for the New Americans Campaign. So, Melissa, now let's talk about the new naturalization form, which is much longer, many new questions. So what's new about it, and why is it so long now?
The naturalization application form was long to begin with. It was a 10-page form. And any of us who have sat and helped somebody complete the application form knows how long it can take. The new form, which came out in May, is 21 pages long. And it is longer in large part because a number of questions were added. Those questions were added because of changes in the law that came out of some of the anti-terrorism legislation. So the legislation required the USCIS to amend the form and add a number of questions, many of which are relating to terrorism.
So what are some of the new questions in the new form?
There are questions such as, did you ever recruit, enlist, conscript, or use any person under age 15 to serve in or help an armed force or group? Did you ever sell, give, or provide weapons to any person or help another person sell, give, or provide weapons to any person?
Okay.
Were you ever a member of, or did you ever serve in, help, or otherwise participate in any of the following groups? Military unit, paramilitary unit, police unit, self-defense unit, vigilante unit, rebel group, guerrilla group, militia, or insurgent organization? And the interesting thing about these questions is that answering yes doesn't necessarily disqualify somebody. There may be a person who served in a military unit, for example, in Israel, because it's mandatory military service. That doesn't mean that the person wouldn't be able to qualify for U.S. citizenship. It just means that people who are filling out this form are going to want to have good advice about the consequences of how they're answering the questions.
Have you ever met or heard of people, you know, they've been here, they have their green cards, but they purposefully are not citizens? For example, they may have political views or religious views that prevent them from, like, taking that oath or pledging allegiance to the United States. And how do you convince those people? Because I know a lot of those people, for example. It's hard for them. They say things like, with everything the U.S. government is doing, you know, in foreign relations and abroad and the drones and Iraq and Afghanistan, does it really make me proud to become an American citizen?
You know, what I would say to somebody who says, I don't want to become a citizen because I have political differences with the United States, I would say, become a citizen and you can make your voice heard. That is how you will be able to voice your concerns about what you feel may be the wrong things and your desires for what you think are the right things for this country to be doing. That seems to me to be almost the best reason for those people. Those are the very people who could be really motivated to become citizens.
What's been your progress so far? How successful has your campaign been?
It has been extraordinarily successful. It's really exciting to see what we've done over the last almost 3 years. So we have helped over 100,000 people apply for citizenship. By doing so free of charge and by helping people with fee waivers, we've saved communities over $89 million.
And you're just smiling. How does this make you feel personally, you know, helping all these people become citizens? It feels like it's satisfying work.
I love this work. I think it's really important for people who are living in this country to have the right to fully, fully belong. And that's what citizenship gives you. It's a right of belonging that can't be taken away.
That's New Americans Campaign Project Director Melissa Rogers. Have you or someone you know struggled with the decision to become an American citizen? If you have your own immigration story to share, tell us about it on our feedback line, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. All week long on KALW, we've been playing you this sound.
Hi, piggies.
Hi.
You're so cute.
We noticed when we saw an aerial photograph of it that it looked shaped like a triangle, and we went with it.
We asked you what that was and where we recorded it to bring us the story behind the sound. We sent KALW's Laura Flynn out to a monthly barn dance at a place with a particularly delicious name.
Now circle left. My name is Nancy Vail, and I'm one of the co-founders and co-directors at Pie Ranch. My husband and I, the day after we fell in love at a barn dance, led by Andy Wilson, who's our caller tonight, we said, let's start a farm together and have children. And so this many years later, we are excited to say we achieved our goal.
Oh, no, no.
Hi, piggies.
Hi.
You're so cute. So the piece of land for neighbors were selling, you know, back in 2002, we noticed when we saw an aerial photograph of it that it looked like a slice of pie. It's shaped like a triangle. And we went with it. We thought, oh, it looks like a slice of pie. We should call it Pie Ranch. You could grow ingredients that go into pie. A lot of typical pie ingredients like pumpkins, apples, strawberries grow really well on the central coast of California. And we also, we didn't want to just be a production farm. We wanted to do education from the get-go and felt that high school was the age group that we wanted to work with primarily, because high school students are at that point in their life where they're becoming adults or making some pretty big choices.
Cute. Look at their eyelashes.
Did you name them?
No.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Sausage and bacon.
We felt like pie would be a way to lure high school students into learning about how food is grown and getting their hands dirty if at the end of all of this hard work they get a nice, yummy, tasty pie.
Okay, we got some good guesses on this one, but nobody got it right this week. Don't feel bad. You'll have another chance to win a KALW t-shirt next week. Want a sneak peek? Take a listen.
Release the brakes and give the engine a little oil and we'll be off and running.
All right. Do you know what that is and where we recorded it? If you do, give us a call. Again, the number is 415-264-7106 and share your guess. And if you're correct, you might just win that KALW t-shirt, and we'll reveal the answer on next Thursday's Cross Currents. That does it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Lisa Carmack, Ronnie Cohen, Leela Day, Maya DePaula-Hanika, Audrey Dilling, Holly J. McDeed, Seth Samuel, and Stephen Short. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Our line producer was Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Our senior producers are Julie Kane and Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thank you. We are listener-supported public radio. And today is the last day for our summer interns from the Philip and Sala Burton High School, where we are located, Jeannie Dwan and Lawrence Chan. We loved having you here, guys, and we're wishing you the best in your upcoming senior year. Bay Area trumpeter Eric Jacobson. He plays next Tuesday with the Michael O'Neill Kenny Washington Sextet. They'll be appearing at the Piedmont Piano Company in Oakland at 4 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.